Hi everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here as usual. This is just a quick intro to this episode. This is actually part one of the big JTET J3 season preview for 2022, with the third tier kicking off this coming weekend. It seemed like the perfect time to take a look at the 18 teams that will be making up J3 this season. So in a moment, you're going to hear me in conversation with who else but Magic Mike Innes. In this instalment, part one of the preview, we looked at six of the J3 sides for this season. In the first half, you'll hear us talk about Hachinohe, Fukushima and Iwaki. And after a short pause, we're back again to talk about YSCC, Sagamihara and Nagano. So I hope you enjoy the episode and the analysis contained therein. And please keep it locked to JTET, because we've got part two and part three with the other teams coming up before the big kickoff this weekend. But I hope you enjoy the show, and here it comes. Speak to you soon. Bye for now. Hi everyone, John Steele here again, and to kick off our J3 2022 season previews with part one, who else could be joining me? None other than Mike Innes. Mike, how are you doing?
Hi John, great, thank you. It's great to be back, but lots to talk about with J3 and a new season ahead.
Yes, Mike, it is very exciting stuff. I know that by the time listeners hear this, I think J1 and J2 will already be underway, and people will be enjoying the thrills and spills of the top two tiers. But there's plenty to enjoy in J3 as well, isn't there, even though it kicks off a few weeks later. I think something we talked about before we started recording, Mike, was that we might have new listeners or you know, curious followers of J1 and J2 joining us for these previews. So in a nutshell, and not to throw you under the bus early doors, but what is J3 all about? Can you give us a quick primer for anyone, podcast hosts who've not been paying attention, like myself, or any new listeners? What's this J3 thing all about?
I think it's important to welcome new listeners aboard. It's good to have you with us. And so J3 is, as the name indicates, it's the third division in the J League, and therefore the third tier of club football in Japan. It was introduced into the J League structure in 2014. So that means that 2022 is the ninth season. And over the years, the number of clubs taking part has grown from 12 in 2014 to 18 in the season ahead. The format of the division this year will be a standard one, 34 games played between the 12th of March. So there's a little bit of a gap between the start of J1, J2 and J3. And it ends on the 20th of November. The top two clubs are automatically promoted to J2. No playoffs, and there isn't currently any relegation out of J3 to the JFL as the top tier of non-league, although that might be introduced as soon as the end of next season. I think what makes the division interesting for me, at any rate, is the basic unpredictability you tend to get with the J-League more broadly, combined with the range in type and size of club. So this year, for example, we've got the comparative giants of Matsumoto Yamaga, who in 2019 were in J1. We've got some teams with pretty extensive experience of J2, like Katare Toyama, FC Gifu, Kagoshima United. Some teams whose J-League history has never taken them out of J3, like Fujieda, My FC, Vanrari Hachinohe and YSCC Yokohama. And one team making their J-League debut, Iwaki FC, mention of whom provides an opportunity to draw attention to two brand new derby clashes that will be a keen focus of attention for local fans this year. Iwaki against Fukushima United and Matsumoto against AC Nagano Parseiro. So we're all set for an exciting new season, and welcome listeners old and new to come along for the ride.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I think the J3 couldn't have done a better job of selling itself if they paid us lots of money to say those nice things, Mike. Fantastic summary.
If only.
Yeah, and I think much better than I could have done. I think I would have just said that J3 is interesting because it's where things get kind of weird. You sort of get this really interesting mix of, like you said, big clubs that have spent time in J2, small clubs that have been in J3 since it started and, you know, had kind of a previous lives in sort of like amateur or regional football. And, you often get, to be honest, very low hipsterish crowds, full percussion band behind the goal kind of thing. It's just a really interesting and more sort of in general anyway, perhaps more community minded than football at the very top level. I don't think that's something that's unique to the J League. I think, you know, countries around the world have a similar thing, don't they? Is that you go down the sort of football pyramid, but plenty to enjoy in J3, and we hope the listeners will be along for the ride on JTET this season. Without further ado, Mike, we should get down to some serious business. We're here to preview six of the 18 teams that make up this season's J3 kind of a group, if you like. And what we decided was, rather than just going through the teams in kind of order of league finish from last season, we'd group them sort of geographically. More or less, you know, with one or two exceptions, just because geography doesn't always work out exactly the way you want it to. So we're talking mainly about teams from kind of north and kind of Kanto this time, is it? That's pretty much right, isn't it? So we're going to talk first about Hachinohe, who I know is a team that you've taken a very keen interest in as they kind of go on this journey from sort of professional to even more professional as time goes on. Fourth season in J3 for them this year, and I know they're really working hard on trying to increase their fan base. I know they have a kind of target of 888 fan club members for this season, currently hovering at around 300, so lots of work to do. I think last season they were pretty good in the first half, weren't they, Mike? And things tailed off fairly dramatically in the second. So what can we expect from them in 2022? Do you think, looking at their ins and outs, they do seem to have more or less strengthened? I see some quite interesting names on their kind of a roster in terms of new signings. Jun Arima from Imabari, Masashi Kokubun from Akita, Koichi Miao also from Imabari, all look kind of quite eye-catching. And the only players kind of going out that I think they'll really miss, maybe Yosuke Kamigata, a big striker who's gone to Kita Kyushu, also in J3, of course, and Shu Maeda leaving to drop down to the JFL and go to Suzuka Point Getters with King Kazu Miura. So, Mike, what are we thinking?
Well, as we discussed on the 2021 review pod, of the sort of smaller J3 clubs who are taking steps to establish themselves, off the field, at least, it's Hachinohe who seem to be making concrete progress. So we talked about them obtaining a J2 licence and gaining experience of staging night games, which they hadn't done before. And on the pitch, though, results last year were pretty similar to those from the season before. So 2022 will be their fourth season in J3. But so how do we think about the chances of them moving out of the bottom third of the division, which is where they've been for most of the time? And I think that if they're the closed season sort of squad building activity, which you've just touched upon there, John, I think if that's anything to go by, the answer to that question seems to be a really positive one. So in terms of the outgoings, as you've just said, the only player who has left to join another club is Kamigata, who's gone after three seasons and 27 J3 goals. He's gone to Kita Kyushu. The club, they chose to let go a couple of experienced players, Shu Maeda and Keita Tagami, but neither was as important as in previous seasons. And I'm going to say, neither was Kamigata last year, who I thought was sort of outshone by Takumi Shimada. No massive losses then for the coach, Masahiro Kuzuno, to deal with, but who have they brought in to help them to move up the table? I think it's a selection that surprisingly few clubs can match up to. So we've got two players have come in from Akita, as a super experienced central midfielder, and now their club captain, Nobuyuki Maeda. There's Masashi Kokubun, who you've mentioned, a bit of a returning hero. He was outstanding for Vanrana in 2020, but was barely more than a bench warmer at Akita last year. Strong J3 experience from, as you've said, Jun Anima and Koichi Miao from Imabari. Also a centre-back, Kodai Fuji from Iwate. Shockingly, also left midfielder Ryo Watanabe, a regular starter at Miyazaki in their outstanding J-League debut year. Two very eye-catching players from the JFL as well, of somebody who I find his name very difficult to pronounce, but it's Aoi Sato. He's 24, scored 8 last year for Sony Sendai. Centre-back of Yusei Shimoda, 25, comes from Kochi. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see both those guys get some playing time. So overall, it looks like Kuzuno has not only a better team, but a stronger squad than before. I remember the point that we made in the reviews about successful teams last year introducing fresh players in the second half of the season. Well, that was when Hachinohe fell away, but Kuzuno looks to have options available to him now. This time, I'm not expecting them to do an Iwate from a 13th place finish in 2021, but top half shouldn't be beyond them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty positive positive talk that I think any Hachinohe supporters listening will be pleased to hear. I feel the same. I think it seemed like they were going along pretty well in the first half of last season, and then they seemed to run out of steam quite spectacularly, didn't they? And they, as you said, results on the pitch were not that much different to seasons that they've had before. But with the players that they brought in, coupled with the fact that, as you mentioned, they haven't lost anybody irreplaceable, I'm in the same camp, Mike. I'm expecting to see a moderate improvement from Hachinohe this season, aided no doubt by that very, very high camera angle at their home stadium, which always gives me has me clinging to the sides of the chair when I'm watching the highlights. So I don't know if it does the same thing to opposition defenders, but yes, moderate improvement for Hachinohe seems likely. Let's talk about another team from that kind of a similar sort of a Tohoku region, at Fukushima United. Now, they had a really, really good season in 2021, didn't they? Finished in, I think it was fifth in the end. They're a team that's been in J3 since the division began in 2014. And something that you've mentioned to me more than once in the past is, they've found it difficult to kind of compete, in terms of chasing promotion with teams that have kind of more money and more resources. And that is something that's going to be at the forefront of Fukushima supporters' minds this season, isn't it? Because they've got their new derby coming up with an upwardly mobile Iwaki in J3 this year. For Fukushima, I think some important changes we should mention. Obviously, they have a new manager in the form of Toshihiro Hattori in the hot seat this time. In terms of players coming in, I like the look of Shun Obu from Iwata. He was a Gunma, wasn't he, at centre-back last year in J2. Didn't look out of place at all, so I think that's a good sign-in. Junya Takahashi coming in up front from Yamagata on loan. I think it's always good if you can bring in players from a higher level. He's coming in from a very, very upwardly mobile J2 team. In terms of players going out, I think there are some important losses, aren't there? Hayato Fukushima, his loan from Shonan's finished. He's gone back. Shoma Kamata has gone to Toyama, which looks like a bit of an unfortunate move. He's moving to a sort of promotion rival, if you like. Hiromu Kamada going to Sendai. He'll also be missed, I think. And the one that we really have to mention is Tokac, the sort of Turkish-German forward who has gone to Tochigi FC to link up with last season's Fukushima manager Yu Tokisaki. He's gone to Tochigi in J2. He's taken Tokac with him. Mike, it's hard for me to imagine Fukushima doing much better than fifth place, you know, or that kind of top third of the table with what they have in their roster. But am I being a bit too pessimistic? What do you think?
I think this is we started out on a bit of a high with Hachinohe. Fukushima, maybe they're in a slightly different situation. And perhaps we can compare the two clubs as well in terms of their off the field approaches. So the first thing to say about Fukushima is that it feels as if they're attaching a lot of importance to that, specifically their plans to gain a J2 license. So the listeners from the pot to the pod from last year may recall it was the absence of a youth team as part of their infrastructure, which in the middle of 2021 caused Fukushima to fail in their J2 license application. And that meant that no matter how good results were on the pitch, and as you've said, they got a best ever fifth place finish, they were not eligible for promotion. So it's not surprising to see them relate their recent round of crowdfunding to that issue, the issue of the establishment of their youth team. Some may raise an eyebrow at remarks from their CEO, a guy called Hayato Suzuki, and he recently said that crowdfunding is a prerequisite for J2 promotion, with the main purpose of improving the environment for the youth team. As I recall, John, you are sceptical about basing business critical activity on what amounts to sending round the begging bowl, and I suspect that you're not alone. We'll see in due course how successful that is. So in terms of the squad, as you've said, the coach Yu Tokisaki has replaced Kazuaki Tasaka at Tochigi in J2, and he's taken with him Tokac, one of the most impactful players in the division over the last couple of years, and I think that he will be greatly missed. Also, I think it's bad news that Shoma Kamata, Hayato Fukushima have gone. A significant blow, the late departure to Sendai of Hiromu Kamata, only 20 years old, but a rock in central midfield in his rookie season. And I think that loss greatly reduces their options in a key part of the team. I wonder if they might go out looking for somebody to bring in there. Tokisaki's replacement, the first opportunity when talking about coaches during these previews to use the phrase ex-Iwata legend, Toshihiro Hattori, on the coaching staff at Jubilo for 8 years, steps out on his own. I wonder if he was ever in the running for the Jubilo job and how he might have ended up in J3 instead. Really excited to see Junya Takahashi, who you mentioned. He is loaned from Yamagata, but he had an excellent loan season at Numazu last year. Really enjoyed watching him. He's reportedly targeting at least 10 goals for the new season. There's also attacking midfielder Hikaru Arai, who loaned from Shonan, and he was at Tottori for the last 2 years. A handful of players who are staying on that I'm looking forward to seeing more of are centre-back Kazuki Dohana, very impressive in his debut season last year. There's teenage forward Shoki Nagano, and a perhaps overlooked signing from midway through last season, that's a forward, Simon Chibweze. It's not fair to consider if he can be a new Ismaila, but I do want to see what he can bring to the team. overall, I'd say there seems to be quite some uncertainty around Fukushima going into the season. I wonder about their ability to cope as an organisation while continuing to promote on-field performance. Of course, everything may click, but as things stand, I think it will be hard for Hattori to bring about a repeat of the achievements of 2021, and Fukushima are more likely to slip back down into the bottom half of the division.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. There are a few question marks, you know, always when a new manager comes in. And like I said, I think the expectation was that Hattori was being groomed to take over at Iwata. And the perfect opportunity seemed to have come to do that, right? When they were looking for a new manager at the end of last season, but they went out and got an Akira Ito from... He's gone to Iwata. Yeah, so perhaps that upset Hattori, or he... I mean, I'm just speculating. Perhaps he realised, okay, I'm not going to get the job at Iwata and J1. But then, yeah, to go down to J3 is quite an interesting one. Obviously, he was enthused by the project, maybe, or, you know, can build a reputation for himself as a number one there. He might have the drive and motivation to do that, especially if he feels like he's been sort of like overlooked for the job at Iwata. But that's all projection from me. I don't know anything about that in detail. But Fukushima have had a hard job. I mean, in the past, we've talked about how they had stadium issues. I think, you know, 2 years ago, the pitch at their home stadium, Toho Bank Stadium, was like pretty disastrous. And it was, you know, I'm not sure. It was a bit like watching an episode of Match of the 70s for any British listeners who've ever watched that program. You know, highlights are just kind of like mud-filled, like ploughed fields. So they seem to be getting things together very slowly, I think, in an off-the-pitch sense. So that's good. The pitch was a lot better last year, wasn't it? And they also have been playing some games at the J Village Stadium in Fukushima. So I'm not entirely sure if that's to do with renovation at the Toho Bank Stadium or not. But in terms of personnel... I'm just really repeating what I said in my lead-in, but I think that looks like a pretty decent sort of middle of the road, mid-table J3 squad to me. I wonder how much more juice, if you like, Hattori can squeeze out of that orange. But to be honest, 12 months ago, Mike, we'd probably have sat here and said the same thing about Iwate, and they ended up finishing second, they're getting promoted to J2. So I don't think it's impossible. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Shota Nagano more as well. For he was absolutely electric when he got a run in the team at the end of the season up front. But I think there will be... and this is something we'll perhaps talk about in more detail later or in part two, but four pretty strong-ish teams are coming down from J2, right? It's going to be hard for Fukushima to lay a glove on any of those four you have to feel. But it's always interesting with Fukushima, and they always have at least eight really nice Hummel kits, don't they? They always seem to be wearing a different kit every time they take to the field. So I'm looking forward to seeing that variety of uniform design as well. Maybe we should talk about the big kind of prefectural rivals to Fukushima United, who are making their debut in J3 this year, Mike. So we'll move on and talk about Iwaki. A very, very ambitious club. In the notes that you helpfully shared with me beforehand to help me to get ready, you mentioned drive and professionalism as being some of the watchwords for them. I think they are the JFL champions, right? So they won the kind of fourth tier league competition last season to get promoted into J3. Looking at their kind of squad list, this is where things start to get a bit hazy for me, because I'm not really sure who the key players were last season. So I'm not sure how the ins and outs have affected them too much. What I do notice with my less than forensic eye is that most of the new players that have come in for this maiden J3 season are from various universities. A lot of them in the kind of Tokyo area, which is interesting, rather than Fukushima. They do have Kengo Tanaka, an experienced goalkeeper, coming in from Nagano, which looks like a decent signing. And in terms of players going out, the only one that caught my eye, because it's a foreign player and because he's going to Tokyo Verde, is Byron Vasquez, who I think is a Chilean midfielder. I'm not sure. I did do some research, by which I mean I Googled him a few times. I couldn't find anything too exciting to share with listeners on him, but I'm very curious to see how he gets on at Tokyo Verde. And I don't really know what kind of player he is, but he must have done something in that JFL season, championship winning season, to catch the eye of scouts higher up. Before I come to you, Mike, I'm just going to bring in a question from our good friend Johnny Nickel on Iwaki, and it's pretty much a question that I wanted to ask, but he's phrased it much better than me. In recent years, teams that have come into J3 have had some pretty strong showings, haven't they? Ima Barry had a really strong first season, and Miyazaki, who joined the league last year, were absolutely fantastic, weren't they? And ended up finishing third and surprising everybody. So how are we feeling about Iwaki going into this season? I mean, are they a team that could do a Miyazaki and be a genuine sort of a top four contender, or is it more likely that they'll where are they going to finish, Mike?
I think that going back to last year, they certainly appeared to be the strongest side in the JFL, and they played a pretty up tempo, quite a physical side. They're on the front foot sort of football, and I think that stylistically that has the potential to trouble J3 teams. Pretty different from the sort of thing which Miyazaki were producing last year, but very much a sort of like an up and at 'em, quite a hard running side. They've kept on the JFL Player of the Year, a midfielder, Yuto Yamashita, and they've got the JFL Rookie of the Year. He's nominally a defender, but he seems to play everywhere, Riku Saga. And they've also kept on a key midfielder, Masaru Hidaka, and both of their main forwards, Shota Suzuki, and 22-year-old Daigo Furukawa. Furukawa, I'm especially looking forward to seeing how he gets on in J3. He got a small amount of J-League playing time back in 2017 as a teenager at Chiba. They had a slightly difficult time with goalkeepers last year. And for one fixture near the end of the season, their first choice was injured and the second choice suspended. And this meant that against Suzuka, they had to field the third choice, a guy called Timothy Shiraoka. And because they only had three keepers in the first team squad, they temporarily promoted the 166-centimetre tall Takuho Misawa from the under-18s to fill in as substitute. And I very much anticipate that it will be the signing that you mentioned, Kengo Tanaka from Nagano, who gets the nod this season. They might have a reputation as a well-backed club thanks to their connections to the sportswear company Under Armour. But as you mentioned, John, Iwaki haven't been extravagant in the transfer market. In fact, I think they may end up being a squad who look to their rookies to make an impact. One thing that I'm going to try to do in these previews is to mention rookies or players from non-league who I think might end up getting playing time. If I'm right, great. If I'm wrong, well, that will be fun and entertaining for the listeners. But I'm prepared to give it a go, is what I'm saying. With players like a goal-scoring attacking midfielder, Ryo Anitap from Kokushikan University, a big centre-back, Rei Ieizumi from Ryutsu Keizai University, who won the Kanto University League Championship last year. J-Tech listeners may be familiar with the name Kyoan Hoshi, centre-back who joins on loan from Yokohama FC, having spent last year on loan at Matsumoto. He'll have worked at Yamaga with Iwaki's incoming coach, Hiromasa Suguri, who's taking charge of a team for the first time in his career. He's previously been on the staff at not only Matsumoto, but also Machida and Gifu. So to come to Johnny's question, As we've discussed, the last two teams to come up from the JFL, Imabari and Miyazaki, have both done very well in their first seasons. And I think that there's no reason to believe that Iwaki are going to struggle. I think it's difficult, particularly bearing in mind the lack of direct J3 experience in the squad. There really isn't that much. I think, by my reckoning, there are only five players in the squad who've ever appeared in the J League. I think that makes it difficult to forecast, you know, a real sort of top of the table promotion challenge. I mean, I think that's a possibility, but I'll perhaps settle for a halfway finish.
Yeah, I think that kind of tallies with, I mean, my sort of, I'm very much just feeling out the team based on what I see on paper in front of me. But yes, if the team is full of, you know, players who are obviously good but don't have that much J-League experience, it's very hard to confidently go out there and predict, yes, they're going to challenge, you know, teams that have just come down from J2 at the top of the table. And I think Iwaki, yeah, the recruitment has been very cautious, hasn't it? I mean, we can say shrewd after we've seen these guys play and figured out if they're good or not. But yeah, definitely you get the feeling. And I mean, we're not talking about Saneki in this episode, thank goodness. But in terms of kind of a long term plan or overall sort of roadmap for growing the club, in terms of ambition, I think when we talk about Iwaki, that's the kind of ambition we're talking about, isn't it? It's like a long term project to stabilize the team in J3, I think, and then go higher. So Johnny, it's a good question, and yeah, Micah alluded to the fact that we've been wrong before, but I expect sort of like slow and steady performances and results from Iwaki this season. I would be surprised to see them up at the very sharp end of the table, you know, based on what I know about the squad and the players that they have right now. But yeah, we'll wait and see. Sometimes it can be a good shock and a good disruption for established J3 teams to have kind of new fresh face teams coming in and tearing things up. Imabari have done it, and Miyazaki did it last year, as Johnny mentioned. So yes, we'll put a question mark next to Iwaki for now, but I don't expect them to be any trouble at the bottom. I have to say, I don't think they'll be, you know, scrapping around for points or having a really hard time. I think they'll be somewhere in the middle, and I think they'll be pretty happy with that. Mike, talking of being somewhere in the middle, I think we'll take a quick comfort break, if that's okay now. And when we come back, we're going to run through three more of the teams in this season's J3 League to round off part one of the season preview. So back soon. Let's take a quick break. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Three more teams for us to discuss in this first, you know, part one of our big J3 season preview. And Mike, please tread softly on the next one, because it's a team that's very close to mine and my son's hearts. YSCC Yokohama, the Yokohama Soccer and Culture Club. I think that's right. They change the name now and again. A new coach in the hot seat in the form of Kenji Nakada. That's because Yuki Stauff, last season's impressive Kantoku, impressive coach, he's moved on to Nagano, who we're going to talk about in a few minutes. In terms of players coming in and out at YSCC, it seems a little bit more balanced in terms of numbers than it has been in the last couple of years. But in terms of quality, yeah, I think I have quite a few questions. I think the most eye-catching signings would probably be Daisuke Matsui, of course, you know, sort of very well-travelled and high-quality player. But he's actually registered also for YSCC's futsal team in the F League, Professional Futsal League in Japan. So I'm not sure how much game time he's going to have for YSCC. Another intriguing signing is Kaito Nakamura. I think he's coming from Braga's under-23s team in Portugal. So presumably you don't get to play at a decent-sized club like Braga if you're not very good. In terms of players going out, the one that was hard for me and my son to take was Yuma Funabashi, the all-action, wing defender. He's followed Yuki Stealth and gone to Nagano, so good luck to him. Kei Oshiro was an impressive performer at centre-back. His loan from Urawa has finished and he's gone back. And Charles Nduka, who provided quite electric performances up front for much of the season, he's gone to Gifu, another J3 rival. Mike, it's very hard for me to shake the feeling that YSCC are going to regress from the sort of impressive stuff they were producing last season. Is that harsh on the new manager, Kenji Nakata, or do you think I've got it about right?
I think probably, to cut to the chase, I think you've probably got it about right. I mean, he's facing a really difficult situation. So they've lost half of their first team from last year. So with Yuki Stealth having gone to Nagano, who we'll be talking about shortly, and he's taken with him not only Yuma Funabashi, one of your favourites, and not many J3 players you could describe as dashing, are there, John? But I think he's probably one of them. But he's also gone to Nagano. Are Yuta Sato and Hayato Ikegaya? They've gone off there as well. And they were all sort of crucial players in the club's best ever finish. I think you're right to mention Kei Oshiro and Charles Nduka. Oshiro has, in fact, he's been sold on from Urawa. He's since joined Ehime, and as you say, Charles Nduka has gone to fight for his place among the Galacticos at Gifu. So the exciting young coach has gone, an array of players from across the team. And from ages 21 to 29, they've gone. After the enormous progress that Yuki Stealth was able to make last year for the team that he's left behind, it looks a bit like starting from scratch. So who's going to participate in that process? I think especially important for YSCC are players who previously, maybe they weren't first choice members of the starting lineup, and they are guys who need to step up to the plate. I'm thinking about players like Shuntaro Kawabe, a forward, an attacking midfielder who took my eye last season, Etsushi Kikutani, and the right-back Minoru Hanafusa, for example. They're likely to have more opportunities, and for their own good and for that of the team, they need to make the most of them. And I think to me, it's important. This is particularly important because I don't see many definite first choice players among the new signings. You've already mentioned Daisuke Matsui and Kaito Nakamura, who are certainly the most eye-catching of those new signings. Perhaps more conventionally, there's a centre-back or left-back, Takuya Fujiwara, who brings J3 experience from Numazu and subsequently Tottori, although he seems to have ended up being the fall guy for Gainari's poor defensive showing last year. A couple of young players to look out for are 20-year-old local boy centre midfielder Riku Furuyado, who is loaned from Yokohama FC. And I think we might see a rookie, big striker Yonggi Han from Korea University. Will he slot into the gap left by Charles Nduka? With the difficult task of trying to move the team on is, as you say, Kenji Nakata. Definitely not the same sort of appointment as his predecessor. He's 48, moves to Mitsuzawa from the coaching staff at Gifu, where he was briefly in charge to see out the tail end of the 2020 season following the dismissal of Zdravko Zimunovic. Most of his previous experience comes from Corfu, where he was a one-club man as a player. But as a coach, this is the first time that Nakata has properly been the boss. He's overseeing what we might call a forced transition. And the challenges that throws up, I think, are likely to mean YSCC end up closer to the bottom of the standings.
Yeah, I can't really argue with any of that. I think one thing we can say is it's always a fun, or one thing I can say is always fun to go and watch a home game at YSEC. You know, very sort of family friendly, sparsely attended games, which just as a sort of a gentleman nearing my 40s, just what I want on a Sunday afternoon. You know, no crowds, no have to queue up for anything. Yeah, in terms of things on the pitch, I think they really overachieved last season in finishing sort of as high up as they did. I think it was eighth, wasn't it? They finished in the end. And yeah, it's hard to imagine that being replicated in 2022, although I'm sure they'll have some good results and good performances along the way, because I think a lot of the young players there are really good. And I think if they get more game time, it's no bad thing. But yes, I think a hard season in prospect for YSEC, especially if we take into account a more general point I think we can perhaps come back to, but I think the league is going to be a little bit stronger overall because four teams are coming down from J2, and I think at Iwaki coming up from J3, as we mentioned before the break, I don't think they'll be amazing, but I don't think there'll be any slouches either. So yeah, hard 10 months in prospect for YSEC, I think. Let's stay in Kanagawa for a minute, Mike, and talk about Sagami Hana, who, you know, battled gallantly to try and keep hold of their coveted J2 place, didn't they, last season? Unfortunately, they just fell short and ended up being relegated. Takuya Takagi has stayed on. He's back in the hot seat as manager, which I think is probably the best signing they could possibly have made. In terms of a transfer business, player-wise, they've done what I call a Kanazawa, which might not mean anything to you, but it's an in-joke with James, because in terms of just the sheer number of players that have been moved around, I need a whole page of A4 just for one team. In my notes, that's Kanazawa were the first team to do that to me. Sagami Hara have followed suit. Loads of players have left, Mike, so I'll leave it for you to highlight the key ones. In terms of players coming in, they have a couple of new goalkeepers, don't they? Kento Okakoi is coming from Matsumoto, J3 rival. Takehiro Shibasaki's joined from Tokyo Verdy in J2. Interesting defenders have come in as well. Daisuke Watabe from Omiya, Hiroki Mizumoto from Machida, and Anka Jiro Kamata has come in from Kashiwa Reysol. In terms of loan signings, Yuan Matsuhashi, who was really impressive in the kind of attacking positions on loan from Tokyo Verdy last year, his loan's been extended for another year. I'm quite surprised about that. I thought he'd perhaps done enough to earn a kind of recall to Tokyo Verdy to be integrated there in J2, but it's not happened. Kensei Nakashima looks like a good addition. Kaoru Takayama from Oita looks like a great one. And yeah, up front, Takayuki Funayama coming in from Jeff United. I think he's getting on a bit now, so I wouldn't say you're guaranteed goals from him, but at J3 level, he should be pretty deadly, you would think. Sagami Hara obviously going to be targeting you know, the promotion spots, aren't they, Mike, and trying to get back into J2, they'll probably feel this is their best chance to do that, you know, bounce back quickly with the nucleus of a very strong squad. Do you think they have a chance of doing it with those players? And yeah, tell us about some of the players that have left as well.
So the first of the relegated clubs we're talking about in the previews, Armajon, battling performances under Takuya Takagi meant that they almost managed to avoid the drop in their first ever season in J2. But back to the third tier they come. Takagi's still there, as you mentioned. And indeed, yeah, he and the front office at Sagami Hara, they've been very, very busy indeed. But the net result of all their activity is that I think that Sagami Hara are looking like they are set up for a promotion push. They've only lost two of their kind of key players who were part of the team last year, which I think is pretty unusual, isn't it, for relegated teams. They can often get kind of picked apart. Their impressive keeper, Motoaki Miura, who some felt was a bit unlucky not to have been the first choice throughout last season, he's gone to Kanazawa. And the ex-Toyama forward, Shu Hiramatsu, who's his five goals, five assists record was enough to pique the interest of Gunma. Takagi has slimmed down the squad. It's one of the smallest in the division. But even so, it looks like there's sort of competition in every position. Not a big group, but it is a balanced one. I like the way that Takagi uses the loan market to pull in young players from J1 clubs, as you meant. They've got centre back Yudai Fujiwara from Urawa, and also from Verdi. You mentioned Yuan Matsuhashi. They've both had their loans extended. I'm wondering how much we'll see of a forward, Rayon Nozawa. He got some J3 playing time as a 16-year-old in 2019 with FC Tokyo under 23. They've certainly brought in some veterans, but perhaps unlike some other clubs that we will mention in these previews, there are players who've been brought in to do a job and add experience to the squad as a counterbalance to the youngsters. I wonder who I could be referring to there. But in terms of the players here, I'm thinking about this former Hiroshima legend, centre-back Hiroki Mizumoto, perhaps one of the most striking signings of the winter that you mentioned, Takayuki Funayama, a mainstay of Chiba for the last 6 years, and he scored more than 50 goals in that time. A couple of players have come from Takagi's days at Omiya. Daisuke Watabe, who you mentioned, he can happily fill in at fullback. Young forward Kazuaki Sasso, who had a successful season on loan at Nagano a couple of years ago. As I said, good balance, tough to beat, bit of flair from Jungo Fujimoto, one of the best takers of set pieces in J3 in the shape of Kensei Nakashima from Gifu. I think Sagamiha are in with a chance of promotion.
Yeah, I think they're a serious contender, aren't they, based on the fact that they haven't lost too many players, and the additions that they've made are good as well. I agree with you. I think in terms of the teams that we discuss in this first part of our season previews, they definitely look the most likely to make a promotion push. In fact, I think, to be honest, the squad looks stronger than the one they actually won promotion with 2 seasons ago, in my opinion. So I think they might actually be better placed in the season that they actually did go up. Of course, you know, the J League has a habit of having these things blow up in teams' faces, so it might all go according to plan, but it looks like a strong squad to me. And it's very hard. I think they're going to be quite a tough team to beat, especially because they were under Takagi in J2, quite an obdurate side, weren't they, by the end of last season. And I think the only blip really was that just really meek and kind of uncharacteristic surrender away at Tokyo Verde on the last day. Perhaps that was with the hopes of getting Yuan Matsuhashi back on loan easily for this season. I don't know. But I tend to agree. I think I'll be watching the first few rounds of Sagamihara games with great interest, because I think I'm expecting them to be near the top of the table quite early on. And I also think they might just have the best manager in the division, or certainly the right fit, it seems like, in the form of Takuya Takagi. So that's them doomed to finish sixth, I suppose, Mike, after all that praise. So talking of being doomed, let's move on. Let's talk about Nagano Parseiro. Now, they have this tag of being the biggest club in J3 that's never been promoted. Is that right? You know, and the biggest J League club never to have made it out of J3 is a tag that they've not really been able to shake off. Beautiful stadium, reasonable crowds and infrastructure, but they just don't. They never seem to have been able to get it right and claw their way out of J3 and into the second tier. And of course, this season is the added spice of the big derby match, right, against Matsumoto Yamaga, to look forward to or dread, depending on whether you're a glass half full or half empty kind of supporter. We mentioned already Nagano, after having a really kind of drab and sort of nothing really going right season in 2021. They've changed approach. They've brought in YSCC's manager, Yuki Stauff. He's brought with him players we've already mentioned from YSCC, Funabashi and Ikegaya at the back, and also Yuta Sato in midfield. Most of the other players, I don't think that have come in at Nagano, anything to write home about, but I think Takuya Miyamoto coming in on loan from Fujiade is more interesting than it might appear, because obviously he had a great season as the main target man for Yuki Stauff at YSCC a couple of seasons ago. So if they can rekindle that relationship, that could be good news for Nagano. They've also brought in Hiroki Yamamoto, kind of big, sort of muscular striker from Fagiano Okayama. I think he wasn't always that prolific at J2 level, but should be a good bet in the third tier. And yeah, in terms of players going out, I'm not sure they've lost anybody irreplaceable, because nobody was really that impressive in 2021 overall, were they? So Mike, what are we thinking about Nagano? We'll just roll in another sort of question from Johnny Nickel, who got in touch with us on Twitter. Even if Nagano's playing squad doesn't improve ability-wise from last year, will Yuki Stauff's arrival mean a kind of automatic improvement regardless? So nice, easy questions for you to finish part one of the previews. Mike, Nagano, what are you thinking?
Well, first of all, I think we should give some credit to the club for trying a bit of a different approach to the task in hand. They haven't gone for a coach in his 50s with a couple of promotions somewhere in the recesses of his resume. And instead, they have, as mentioned, they've brought in a younger person with fresh ideas. Yuki Stauff is 37 and last year took YSCC to a higher final placing than Nagano, with probably the smallest budget in the league. He may be now on a bigger stage with higher expectations, but it's clearly an opportunity for Stauff. And at this point, I also recall, John, that a year ago we spoke in this same context about the notion of un-Jeffing Jeff. And so I wonder also if Nagano have made the sort of appointment designed to bring about cultural change within the club, a new approach, a positive mindset. You've given a good overview of some of the players who Stauff has brought in. So we've already mentioned Yuta Sato, Hayato Ikegaya, Yuma Funabashi, tried and trusted foot soldiers who I think are likely to become important members of the team in 2022. I also agree that Takuya Miyamoto is a very interesting signing. Nagano really did struggle to score in 2021 and subsequently have had a clear out of that unsuccessful forward line, the likes of Shota Sakaki and Shuto Kamena being released. But Miyamoto must be desperate for the opportunity to prove himself after a frustrating year at Fujiade, and he looks a perfect fit for Nagano's requirements. As you said, there are other attacking possibilities along the lines of Yamamoto from Okayama. There's also Koki Harada from Kawasaki, who was loaned to Tottori last year. I'll also, in my attempt to draw attention to some rookies, I'll also mention prolific Reo Yamanaka from Takashoku University. And they've also kept on key players like Tsubasa Sano, Yuki Morikawa, last year's top scorer with 9, Naoki Sanda, who maintains his reputation as one of the standout attacking midfield players in the division. When it comes to departures, captain and centre-back Kenta Hirose perhaps surprisingly leaves for divisional rivals Kagoshima. Dynamic right-back Yuzuru Yoshimura moves on after 3 seasons to J2 and Akita, but they are players for whom, on paper at least, Stauff seems to have replacements in mind. So all in all, I think the evidence suggests that Parseiro have a plan. Not a certainty, their new coach is operating in a different and unfamiliar sort of space now. I also think the plan involves fielding a first choice team. It could be pretty different from last year. There's very much cause for optimism, a fine way to come into a season when you're going to play J-League derby matches against your closest rivals for the first time. I'm not sure the squad has the depth needed for promotion itself. But here's a thought, John. Nagano to finish higher than Matsumoto.
It's interesting times, I think, for Nagano supporters. And I think I agree with the analysis that you gave, Mike. And I also agree that I think they might end up finishing higher than Matsumoto this season. We've alluded to them a few times, and we'll perhaps talk about them in another part of the season previews in more detail, of course. But I think Nagano, I also agree with what you said. It's an adventurous appointment, bringing in Yuki Stealth. I mean, there must be a kind of a Rolodex of kind of, mid-50s managers with pretty similar CVs that you could bring in to take charge of a J3 team at any given time. They've gone for a slightly different route. Young manager, a lot of interesting ideas about how he wants his teams to play. I just hope that now that they have gone as far as appointing him, he gets some time, because I think the first season at YSCC, and even probably the second season as well, to be fair, I can't actually remember how many seasons he was at YSCC, but at least at first it took a really long time for the team to kind of make those big strides that he wanted them to. And something we talked about a few times was how the defense at YSCC was often, if we're being honest, like shambolic. And the question mark about Yuki Stealth became, well, he can organise the midfield and the attack brilliantly, but the defence is always going to be a problem. And that wasn't the case at YSCC last season. They finally got the right kind of formula, but it took time. So I think I hope he gets the time at Nagano as well, where there will be a bit more pressure, to get the results quickly, of course. But I hope the front office and the board who've appointed him stick by him and give him that time, because I think the results could be, maybe not this season, but next, the results could really be worth waiting for, I think. I tend to agree. I think the squad depth, to me, I mean, we just talked about Sagamihara. I mean, if you put Sagamihara and Nagano side by side, it really does feel like you're comparing a J2 team and a J3 one, doesn't it? In terms of the quality and the strength and depth. So we'll wait and see. But I think Nagano really did need like a total reboot after last season. And I think of the managers that were available, Yuki Stealth is probably one of the best qualified to deliver that. Will it be successful? We don't know. Will he get the time that he needs to make the kind of lasting change on the team? That's also something we don't know. But what we do know is the football will be attacking, aggressive, and something that we perhaps didn't always say about YCC, but it was true, is very skillful players as well. We're involved in what he did there. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how they do. But I'll put myself down like you. I'm curious. I'm interested. I'm not confident that they're going to be in that, sort of top two or even maybe top four or five conversation this season. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if I'm looking at the final table and they're sixth, seventh, eighth, and yes, higher than Matsumoto, as we've alluded to more than once. But Mike, all good knockabout stuff. I'm sure we've got a few things right and a few things wrong previewing these six teams. At this point, let's take a pause. I think that'll do for part one of our big J3 season previews, but we'll be back soon for part two, where we'll be looking at six more teams and how they'll be getting on in the 2022 season. But before we finish, we'd just like to say a big thanks to everyone who downloads and listens to JTET, as well as the Big Pod. We really appreciate that. And of course, if you're a backer at any of our Patreon tiers or Patreon levels on Patreon, we really appreciate that support as well. It helps us to keep things running as smoothly as they possibly can here at JTET HQ. So thanks for all the support, and I hope you enjoyed part one. Stay tuned, because part two and part three are coming your way pretty soon. But that's all for this this episode. So take care and bye for now.